And welcome to episode 2 of Frank Discourse. Today, I'd like to introduce you to somebody who is very pivotal about this entire show. And without him, I probably still wouldn't have had episode 1 out yet. And he is going to be a staple, I hope. I hope he stays. I hope he decides to stay. His name is James Fay. And he is instrumental in getting the technology and getting the recording and all that stuff together. So this sounds remotely professional. So why don't you say hello, James, and introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. Thanks for the introduction, Frank. It was very nice of you.
Mm-hmm. I'm a nice guy. So, James, today I want to talk about a number of things. First thing, I guess the big news is that Joe is out, and Joe Biden is out, and for now, it's Kamala Harris is in. And Joe and Jill went kicking and screaming. They did not want to go out, and especially Jill. I don't think Jill Biden wanted to go out at all whatsoever, and I think they were forced to. And I think they must have had some kind of sweet deal for Jill to agree to drop out. I don't know what they promised her, but they must have promised her a lot, because there was in no way, shape, or form Jill Biden wanted her husband to drop out of this race. So, again, I don't know what kind of deal they made, but it must have been very nice for Jill to agree to this.
Well, Frank, I was going to say, I don't think I've ever seen a first lady that who wanted to stay in as bad as her since Hillary Clinton. I mean, you know, the whole time in the 90s, you knew that Hillary was itching to run. And also, I don't know, I mean, you used the term sweet deal. I don't know if maybe it's more that they threaten them with some sort of prosecution the way they've been doing with Trump. You know, maybe they put that on the table and said, look, you guys are out, or else, you know, if you guys think 34 charges is a lot, you know, we'll go after you, we'll go after Hunter, you know, that sort of thing. So
it's possible. I don't think it's something that we'll ever truly know 100% certain. But, you know, this all came about from the debate. And if it wasn't for that debate, I don't think I think Joe would still be running. I don't think there would have been any talk, and we wouldn't be remotely where we are right now. But it was because of the arrogance of, I think, Joe Biden, when he said to Trump, anytime, any place for a debate. And at that point, it was just too late. You couldn't put the animals back in the barn after that door was open. So, and I think they buried themselves, and I think they really screwed themselves over with that. And personally, I don't know if it's a great move for Trump or the Republicans on this. You know, it goes back to the old saw of be careful what you wish for, because you just might get it.
No. Well, yeah, but I don't think, I mean, the past couple of weeks, I don't think there's been a lot of Republicans that were calling for Biden to drop out. The Democrats were. The Democrats were the ones saying Biden's got to drop out. The Republicans were saying, no, keep him in. We want him in. We want to go against him. He's the easy mark, you know. Yeah, that's just the way I was looking at it.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, CNN couldn't have buried him faster than right after that debate. I mean, it was just unanimous. It's like during the debate, they all got the memo. All right, we've got to get Joe out of here. And I think it was just absolute just panic that went through the entire Democratic Party during that debate.
Yeah, but I think that they put Biden up there on stage on purpose, you know? I mean, it's got to be. I mean, we've seen him in better shape, you know, speaking-wise, fairly recently. Everyone was kind of saying leading up to the debate that, they're definitely going to prep him for this. They're definitely going to, you know, have him be the best Biden he can be against Trump and really kind of show the people. And then he get up there, and I feel like they did it on purpose, where they, you know, they let him flounder.
They set him up.
They set him up to do that so they could, so they, this whole thing could happen. I mean, I don't think, you know, these people in the background, the handlers, the party people, the DNC people, are doing anything without planning ahead. I mean, you know, we've seen that just in, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, you know, there's a plan, you know.
Yeah, I hear a lot of that, and I'm not entirely convinced that the Democrats set him up for this, kind of failure. And here's why I disagree with that to a point. I'm not saying it's impossible, but the Democrats are very, very savvy when it comes to political maneuvers. They have always been politically smarter when it comes to operating in the world of politics. They've always been smarter than the Republicans in that sense. They've always been much better political operatives than the Republicans have. And I think that when you had an entire mainstream media, the White House, everybody on the Democratic side, on the left, they were all covering for Joe. And until the moment that that debate started, the entire narrative was everything is fine. Joe is fine. He's sharp as a tack. He's with it. And I think that if they were going to set him up, there would have been some kind of a preemptive hints thrown out publicly in the public narrative. I think there would have been some innuendos. There was nothing. Innuendos that Joe might be slipping, Joe might be getting a little gaga. There was none of that, even seconds before that debate started. That's why I'm not sure I agree with this. They set him up.
Well, couldn't
that? I don't know if I believe that.
But couldn't that have been their long game where they had to get as close to the convention as possible in order to not have any other contenders, to ensure that the vice president, Kamala Harris, would be the candidate? If they did this too soon or before, they'd have too much time. You know, they had to kind of, I mean, you're saying how the Democrats are always politically savvy. This is their political savviness. Letting Joe go as long as possible, covering for him, until they had a moment where they could show the whole world that he is unfit to run. And then they could sneak in Harris in the background.
Well, then what the Democrats did, though, they basically showed the world that night of the debate. They showed the world, hey, we are lying through our teeth to you, the American public, and we have been for years, by not trying to kind of preemptive or introduce the possibility that Joe's slipping. If there were, this was a long game, they had to have taken that into account, saying, look, if all of a sudden, you know, we've been lying to the American public, which they have been for years about Joe's condition. I mean, even the White House, what do they say? These are cheap fakes. Mm. They call them cheap fakes every single time that the right-wing media, conservative media, would talk about Joe's slip-ups, his gaffes, and how he was just babbling and making no sense at all. The White House was calling all those, and the media went right along with it. The mainstream media went right along with it as yet, and they called them cheap fakes. So they basically, if this was their plan of setting him up, and again, this is another reason why I don't believe they were setting it up and they were planning this, is because it's, again, whether that's their long game, well, then they're admitting to the American public, hey, you know what? Yeah, this is our long game. We were lying to you. And there it is. It's out in the open. Now you all can see how much we were lying.
Now, yeah, but Frank, sorry. Their voters don't care. You know, I mean,
well, hold on. The base doesn't care. And listen, just like there are people who will never vote for a Democrat no matter what, they're only going to vote for party line. And the same thing with Democrats. There are Democrats who will never vote for a Republican. They're always going to vote party line. But those aren't the people you're trying to convince in any election. You're trying to get the swing voters who will go either way.
Right.
And basically, I think there are still plenty of people out there, or at least there were, and I think there's still plenty more, who if you just basically blatantly say, you know, hey, tell me you've been lying to us for years without saying we've been lying to you for years. That debate did it. That debate stated exactly that. And that's why I don't think that the Democrats planned this or they set him up.
But I think that the voters that the Democrats are trying to court are low information voters who don't sit there and watch the news from different sources, you know, whether it's YouTube or wherever. They're not saying they're engaging in this stuff. And they watch a 30-second clip of Biden, or they read an article where it says, you know, Joe Biden said this today at a speech, and they cut out all the gaffes and all the things, and they make it look like he's saying, oh, he sounds great. Oh, he's fine. The Republicans don't know what they're talking about. And they were able to put that out there and show, oh, well, look, you know, like these people were carried along the entire time until the moment the Democrats wanted them to see that Biden was unfit. And then, you know, now they could play the game. You know, they had everything set up for that.
I see what you're saying. And, you know, to a point, well, the mainstream media is still doing it. They're still playing defense because the mainstream media has become the auxiliary arm of the Democratic Party. And they have been for years.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what really kind of burns me up about the mainstream media. And I've always said, I don't care that the mainstream media, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, New York Times, Washington Post, St. Louis Dispatch, LA Times, I don't care that Time Magazine, I don't care that our public school systems, our collegiate system, everything almost coming out of Hollywood, what we see on TV, I don't care that all of these institutions are left. What drives me absolutely nuts is none of them have the intellectual integrity or intellectual honesty to admit it. And, you know, the newspaper of the Communist Party was called Pravda, which means truth, which the only truthful thing that was in that paper of Pravda during the Soviet Union days was, you know, how New York Times has the byline, all the news that's fit to print. Washington Post has the byline on every front page that democracy dies in darkness. Well, Pravda also had a byline on every front page, and that was the official newspaper of the Communist Party. And at least they were honest. If the New York Times or Washington Post actually put as their byline the official newspaper of the Democratic Party, I'd be like, okay, well, now I'll stop criticizing him because at least now they're being honest.
Right,
and
right.
I don't criticize MSNBC, and I don't criticize Fox for who they are and what they are, because both of those news stations are pretty honest. I mean, MSNBC pretty much says, hey, we're on the left.
Right.
Fox News, we're on the right. I don't have a problem with that. At least you're being honest of what you
are.
Yeah,
sure.
I don't have a problem with the New Republic being on the left and National Review being on the right, because that's what they're there for. They admit it. They're not trying to hide it, and they don't pretend to be only have objective, just the facts, man. They don't pretend to be those media outlets like everybody else does. And that's what drives me crazy. But the mainstream media, for that narrative, has been playing along with the White House, that Joe is with it, Joe is sharp. I could be wrong, but that's why I don't think that it was a setup. I don't think the Democrats... I don't know what the Democrats were thinking, to be honest, because I can't imagine how... I mean, I think what they were expecting is the Joe to at least go out there, give him the week's rest that they had, the 2 or 3 weeks rest, drug him up, get him all high on amphetamines or whatever they're putting into his body so he could be alert and give a pretty decent performance that night. And it just fell flat. I think exactly what they tried to do is what happened, but it fell flat. There wasn't enough drugs. There wasn't enough rest that Joe could have taken that was going to have him perform well that night. And I think it just all went crashing, and they had the media blitz all during that campaign. Every single major news person in the mainstream media got the memo. All right, now the memo. Here's the narrative. Now the narrative is it was awful. He's got to go. And I think that's what I think that's what happened.
I agree with you on that, but I think it was done purposely. You're saying that they took advantage of a moment when it came to them.
Yes.
And saying, well, the bait was bad. Now is our chance. I think it was planned beforehand because we've seen Joe give a better Joe Biden speech. Maybe not the best speech in the world, but a better version of a Joe Biden speech, you know, relatively recently.
Well, and when I said before about how the Democrats have always been better political operatives on their agenda than the Republicans have, there is a caveat to that. And that caveat is probably the last 8 years or so. I have never, because the Republicans have always been the party to shoot themselves in the foot. And in fact, I never saw a party shoot themselves in the foot more than the Republican Party. But lately, in the last 8 years or so, I have never in my lifetime see the Democrats shoot themselves in the foot the way they have been. And I think that's a result of how the left has taken over that party. And it's no longer a liberal party. It's a leftist party. And I think the left, number one, they eat their own all the time. And I think the left is so far, it's gone so far left, so far extreme. They don't hear themselves speak. They don't see themselves doing what they're doing. And so they have no frame of reference. They have no outside objective reference to see themselves for what they are. And I think it's that arrogance that I talked about before. That's what's catching them, because they're doing things and thinking that everything's fine. There's too many alternative alternative media outlets out there that are actually reporting on the truth now. And they're still operating in this land as if it's only ABC, CBS, NBC, and CNN. And those are the only news stations, and it's only New York Times, it's only Washington Post. So they can control the narrative. I don't think it's hit them yet, the level of the information, the actual truth and the reality that's actually getting out to the general public. I don't think they've come to terms with that entirely. So somewhat, yes. But again, I think that's what's going on. I think that's one of the reasons why the Democratic Party has really been shooting themselves in the foot in so many things.
I would agree with that. I mean, there's been a lot of times over the past, let's say, 8 years, where, a lot of politicians, but especially Democratic politicians, the media has either gone to the press secretary or to the politicians themselves and said, on such and such date, you said this, it contradicts what you just said earlier today. And they say, oh, I never said that. That's not what I said. And maybe it's a generational thing. Maybe they don't realize that, like, we all have phones in our pockets where you can pull up a YouTube video of them saying it and show it to them. And they're flabbergasted. They think it's like the old days where, you'd read an article in the newspaper and then you threw the newspaper out. You put it in the garbage. You didn't have a reference back to it. And you say, wait a minute, I can search it up right here. It's right there in black and white.
You didn't have the computer in your pocket. Back then, you didn't even have computers in your home.
These guys in their first campaigns for the House and Senate were running at a time when you had, the 6 o'clock news, and that was it.
And isn't that the irony? Like, you would think back then, where you didn't have this instant access of information that we have now with via modern technology, you would think back then they would have lied a lot more, but they didn't because it would have been so much harder for anybody to call them out on something. Well, you said this.
Right.
You'd have to go to the library. You'd have to get, what was that?
Microfilm?
You'd have to look up the microfilm.
Excuse me, Senator. I'll be right back.
Exactly.
Go to the archives.
The palm of everybody's hand. And there's more lies now than there ever have been. You'd think it'd be the reverse. You'd think, like, with all this technology, people would be a lot more honest about what they said, when they said it. And yet, it's not the case. It's bizarre. You would never predict this. If you said 20 years ago or 30 years ago, people are going to have instant access to all this information, I think most people would think, do you think because of that, in the future, people are going to be more honest or lie more? I think everybody normal thinking would be, well, if you can instant access and call up what I just said yesterday or even 5 years ago, within seconds of your palm of your hand, well, that's going to force everybody to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what you would think, but and here we are. Yeah. Here we are. The irony about that. Now, I have heard some talk, and this is, again, I have no idea the validity of it, but these are coming from some people who have been very reliable sources of information. And there is some talk. There's basically two camps right now in the Democratic in Democratic camp. And that is, one of them is about talk about how Kamala is not going to be the one. And the other one is Michelle Obama. Now, if you hear the ones about Michelle Obama, Michelle Obama, by every source, and even those close to her, saying she has zero interest of ever running. But then again, if you want that to be your surprise, that's exactly what you'd say.
Yeah, but I would take her on her word for that, because this isn't somebody who hasn't been in the White House. I mean, she's been there before. She knows what goes on. And why should she go back to that? You know, they were there for 8 years. I don't see her as the Hillary Clinton or the Jill Biden type that wants to hold on to this spotlight. I mean, she sells her book. She lives in her Martha's Vineyard house. They go to Hawaii with Richard Branson. Why ruin a good thing? They have a good thing going. They don't have to.
Yeah, you always knew that Hillary was just chomping at the bit for power and for political prestige and political influence.
I think she would have knocked Bill off the stage in 93 in the inauguration if she could have.
I agree. But then again, I don't know. We could, again, I don't know. But there are other source groups. There's other source groups who are saying that she is preparing. And if she is, and she does come out and say, you know what it's going to be? I didn't want this. I didn't want any part of it. But my country is in such dire straits that something needs to be done. And, you know, if I'm the only one who can do this, well, then it's my duty as an American who is a patriot of this country to do what I can. And so that's why I'm running. So that's what the narrative will be, if it is. Again, I mean, don't think so.
Anything could happen, I don't know, based on the past couple of weeks.
But there are these whispers behind the ears, behind the doors, of this stuff. And I heard that from, I think Walter Kern was talking about that, and how some sources that he knows on the inside, and he didn't name names, and he wouldn't. He said, I cannot name any names, but there's some talk that Michelle is, you know, they're preparing her, or she's prepared. Again, who knows?
I mean,
I guess we'll know when we know.
I'm just imagining the DNC speech, like, you know, one of the senators giving a talk. All of a sudden, you know, the lights go down. WWE, you know, so-called Steve Austin music plays. And they're like, what is happening? And Michelle Obama comes out. And they're like, no way. This is crazy. Like,
tell you,
that would be must-see TV.
It would be like a rock concert.
Yeah. Though. Yeah.
The place would go absolutely...
That would beat the Hulk Hogan speech at the RNC. I mean...
And I also think that would be the biggest threat to Trump if Michelle Obama...
Yeah.
Because she's kind of like an Oprah Winfrey kind of character. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Most people like her, even if they don't... Like, the middle-of-the-road people, the people who are more apolitical...
Right.
Who don't really follow politics that much.
Soccer moms.
Yeah, soccer moms. They like her. She's a likable person. She's never been, according to them, and anything on the surface, all of her publicity that she was done through the 8 years when Barack was president was all neutral. It was all nice. It was all shits and grins.
School lunches.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of so thing. There was nothing there. There was nothing controversial about her. There was nothing negative about her. Everything was positive in a positive light. And for the soccer moms and for the people who are apolitical or just right on the fence and really not too concerned either way, politics, they like her. She has a very, very positive image.
Sure, and sure.
I think
get that
would be a huge, huge threat to Trump.
I think, you know, the moment Biden, the news came out that Biden wasn't going to run anymore, I was really thinking that they would be mum on what the plans were and wait to the convention and propose some people. But within an hour, you know, Kamala Harris had said, "Oh, I'm ready to run." And they, in the past couple of days, they've been pushing for her. I can't see them because of the bus.
Did you see the bus? The Kamala bus?
Oh, I heard about it, but I don't know. Yeah, I heard there's a bus, but I don't.
Yeah, know. Yeah. I saw a quick video. It was, you know, it's like a 10-second video, but you see her coming out of the building, and she goes, "There it is." And they showed the bus.
Oh, I mean, it was. They had it already.
Oh, yeah. It was all ready to go. Wow. She, of course, as she's running up to it, she's cackling like she was.
Oh, well.
You know.
Yeah.
So, and it's there. The right. Kamala bus is there and made. So
I mean,
you know,
I just don't. I can't see them going to the Democratic convention now and having a brokered convention and, you know, delegates arguing and throwing support behind different people, you know, in sort of this 19th century way where they used to have these 140 ballots, you know, until they got a winner.
Yes.
And, you know, and also, who is there? You know, it's been 8 years, and they don't have anybody.
Gavin Newsom, I mean, how do you run on that record?
Right.
What he's done to California.
Yeah, he runs the worst state the country.
I mean, again, it's Kamala. Now, of course, the Democratic Party would get excoriated if they got rid of the first potential female woman
right.
of color,
right.
no less, president of the United right. States of America. But then again, it's Kamala Harris.
Right.
I don't know how.
They really paint themselves into a corner.
Oh, they absolutely. They've painted themselves in the corner, and they don't know what to do.
If I was giving them some ringside advice, I would have said, have somebody else step in for Biden as president and have Kamala be a vice president. You know, she'd still be there, and they could still say they got that identity politics. But I really don't think, you know, if anybody can think of a name, I mean, call up the DNC. They'd be glad to take suggestions at this point. I don't think they have anybody.
Yeah, I don't. And both, if Kamala is the one, the running mate, the vice president is going to have to be, it's either going to be, they're talking about either the, what's his name, Shapiro from Pennsylvania, the governor from Pennsylvania, who comes across as a moderate, but he is a leftist.
Sure.
But he comes across as moderate. And they're going to need the vice president. If Kamala's the one, everybody knows Kamala's on the left. But they're going to need at least an image of more moderate and more centrist Democrat. And the two candidates I've heard are Shapiro from Pennsylvania, and who's the governor? I believe it's of Ohio. I don't know much about him. I forget his name. I think it's the guy from Ohio, who's another Democrat. But again, because I don't know much about him, like I know Shapiro is on the left. He's a leftist in moderate clothing.
Right.
But this other guy, Ohio, I don't know much about him. But I know that he signals more centrist, more
right.
moderate.
That's what they would need. I mean, kind of what they did with Pence and Trump.
Yeah.
They needed a neocon, you know,
yes.
person to be the running mate to solidify that bring in that other wing of the party.
Yeah, and also give some seriousness to the political party.
Yeah,
you know,
right, right.
Which is important. I think that's what Vance is doing too. I think Vance was a brilliant pick for Trump on so many levels.
Much like Hillary's running mate was Tim Kaine.
Yes.
Right. I mean,
I think that was very smart.
You know, the broad populace didn't know his name, just like we didn't know Mike Pence. I mean, nobody knew Mike Pence's name.
Yep.
I mean, you got to bring these people out of obscurity and hope that they don't have any skeletons in their closet.
Yeah.
That's really the goal of the running mate.
They all do. And if there's no skeletons, the opposition party will make up skeletons.
Yeah.
So, that's that. We'll see what happens to that. The other thing, and of course, the other big story, that's huge, of course, is the Trump assassination attempt. And I don't know if you can have much of a bigger egg on the face if you're the Social Secret Service. I don't know I don't know any agency that's got more egg on their face right now than the Secret Service. If that wasn't a debacle of epic proportions.
Yeah, I mean, it was like Keystone Cops.
Yeah.
You know, you might have a Benny Hill song playing in the background. I mean, it was real.
And then I don't know if you heard, what was that senator who absolutely grilled Kimberly Cheadle in Congress? She absolutely grilled him. And at the during the congressional hearing of Kimberly Cheadle's congressional hearing, who had to be subpoenaed to get there, but she was cooperating with him.
It
was supposedly 57 minutes passed from when the Secret Service found out that there was a guy on the roof to the time that he was taken out and neutralized, or to the time that he shot at Trump. 57 minutes.
I mean, I've heard that a half hour after they identified this guy, they deemed him a threat. Yeah. And still let Trump go out there and give a speech. So, I mean, look, these are all, we don't know. These are all things that we're hearing.
Yeah.
But based on what we did see,
yeah,
it's so crazy.
Well, I tell you, she did resign. So she resigned 2 days ago, right after the congressional hearing. Kimberly Cheadle resigned, and as she didn't want to, or she didn't even think she should. But I guess. This is part of the incompetence that is riddling our country and destroying our country, is when you get these people who, and Kimberly Cheadle, as head of the Secret Service, was way more concerned with hiring more, quote-unquote, women, hiring more women to be a Secret Service than protecting her charges and doing her job and doing what she's there, and that is protecting the president, the vice president, candidates, foreign dignitaries. That's what the Secret Service is supposed to do. They're in the protection business. And now, I don't know if you heard, Secret Service is now suggesting to Trump to not do any more outdoor rallies.
Wow.
Yeah, so because they're not confident they can protect him. Like, you're the Secret Service.
Yeah.
Candidates, politicians on both sides of the political fence have been doing outdoor rallies for decades and decades and decades, yeah. And it's never been a problem until now. Why now?
It's crazy how, you know, if you asked anybody before 2 weeks ago and they said, hey, give me the what you picture a Secret Service guy, you know, you'd think, wow, this guy is 6'5". Big muscular guy with sunglasses and like always observing, always knows what's going on, ready at a moment's notice. And then we see like, what? This is like worse than crowd control at a Bon Jovi concert. Like, what are they doing here? You know,
it was an absolute debacle. This is another important topic about this. And this is, of course, going on. You have the right saying that it's an inside job, and you have the left saying that Trump himself staged this. I think both of those theories are a little wacky. Especially Trump staging it himself, I think that's so preposterous, absurd. And I even think an inside job, I don't believe it until I see absolute ironclad proof. I'm not going to go into that, but this is and I think the problem is we've entered a time now, James, that it is impossible. We've entered the time where it's almost impossible to predict anything with accuracy anymore, because there's so many bizarre things that have happened that could not have been foreseen by anybody. And there is just, everything is so polarized, and you have these wild, wild theories coming from both sides of the political fence. And I think, and what I'm seeing, again, on both sides of the fence is, And I think it's dangerous where we're going to. Everything is becoming a conspiracy theory. Everything that happens is a conspiracy theory. There seems to be, there's no coincidence anymore. There's nothing that could have possibly happened organically, as providence would have it, not even providence, but just, you know, one step causes another step causes another, a natural progression. There's no more natural progressions. Everything is a conspiracy. Everything was planned. Everything's been thought out. And I just don't buy that in the age that we're living in, where incompetence is just, it's increasing an almost geometric rate right now. And that is where, again, we have to remember Hanlon's razor. Hanlon's razor is never a tribute to malice, that which can be adequately explained by incompetence or stupidity.
Right. I was just going to say that, Frank, exactly.
And that is, I think, and it's very easy to forget that. And I constantly tell myself that whenever I'm hearing all these theories, I just think of Hanlon's razor. And I think about that quote. And I think that there is a lot of wisdom in that. And again, I think we're at a place where no one believes in coincidence anymore, no matter how likely or unlikely. And some people in general don't believe in coincidence. They attribute almost every happening, every scenario, every experience as having a purpose or it was planned. Now, I think there's tons of coincidences.
Those people read tarot cards as well, Frank. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if we should be listening to them. You know, astrology and tarot cards. Oh, everything has a reason. Everything has a purpose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, a lot of things do. But you can find meaning in a lot of things.
Sure.
And it doesn't mean, though, but that it doesn't mean that what happened, that the purpose of what happened was that meaning. But it doesn't mean you can't find meaning in all that. I get all that. But yet, I think we're in a real dangerous place now where everything is suspect. Everything is nefarious. Everything has got this mastermind behind it. And I don't know. I just don't buy it, seeing the level of incompetence that has been riddling our country for decades.
Yeah, I think that goes to the fact that, I mean, everybody can tailor their news to what they want to hear in their echo chamber. You know, you go on YouTube, you subscribe to these people, and, you know, you're getting their opinion on everything, you know, exclusively. Yep. You know, there's no outside. If you don't want to listen to an outside opinion, you don't have to.
Yeah, and so everybody's caught in this positive feedback loop.
Right,
and that's
right,
all they hear is just the positive reinforcement loop. And I can understand the trap of believing everything is a conspiracy, or I'm very sympathetic to the people who don't trust anything anymore. And the reason why I'm sympathetic to that is because, taking into account that so many of our formerly trustworthy institutions have been caught red-handed lying to us again and again and again, like the mainstream media, like our health institutions, like the medical associations, intelligence agencies, science institutions, government officials in high office, not politicians, but the experts who speak for these people, who are appointed to lead all these institutions, particularly in the last 4 years. My God, have they been caught red-handed lying to us again and again and again. And when they lie, and when they're confronted with their lie, they don't say, you know what, you got me, okay, mea culpa. No, it's, I'm going to double down on this lie, and I'm going to triple down on this lie, I'm going to quadruple down on this lie. And no one gets called out. No one takes any accountability. And I thought that was another great question that Nancy, the congresswoman, I think, from South Carolina, who grilled Kimberly Cheadle on the stand. And she said that she asked Kimberly Cheadle, has anybody been fired in the Secret Service since the attempted assassination of Donald Trump? And she said, no. Hmm. And again, like, right, that's a problem.
Right. Yeah, everybody there failed in their job that day.
Yeah, everybody did exactly what they were supposed to do. Really? Yeah. Like, no one got fired.
Yeah.
It's absolutely unbelievable. There are a lot of heads that should have been rolled the next day, or you know.
Yeah, it's not like they made a typo, you know.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
The presidential candidate almost got killed.
Yeah,
you know, in broad daylight.
Yeah,
you know.
And not only did they double, triple, and quadruple down with their lies, then after they just keep on lying again and again, then the gaslighting starts.
Yeah,
you know, the gaslighting Well, we never forced anybody to get the vaccine. We never threatened anybody's jobs if they didn't get the vaccine. Well, we wanted schools to open up as soon as possible during a pandemic, like the teachers' union said that. I can't believe the head of the teachers' union actually said that. She said, oh, we were always for opening up schools as soon as possible. And like, are you joking?
Yeah, right, right.
They did the exact opposite.
I mean, we're used to...
No one ever said the vaccine would prevent you from contracting or spreading COVID.
Right.
You know, and on and on and on. And so the gaslighting starts as soon as... And they accurately, and they can understandably, they're counting on the short memory of the American people. Because we do. We have an incredibly short memory.
Sure.
And people forget. Listen, I have a dear friend of mine. And he even said, he goes, I don't remember them ever saying that you wouldn't get COVID if you got the vaccine or you wouldn't spread it. I always heard that you have to get the vaccine because it will reduce the risk of the severity of the sickness or hospitalization. And then I went back to him and I found that video on YouTube that has all the compilations of all the major people talking about
I've seen that.
All these different news on all the mainstream media and all the figureheads saying that if you get the vaccine, you will not get COVID. You will not contract COVID. You will not spread COVID.
Right.
And you will not be contagious. And I had to show him the whole compilation. It was like a 2-minute compilation of all these authorities and figureheads and quote-unquote scientists, medical scientists, who said all this stuff. And, you know, it just goes to prove the shortness of our memory. So, and then I ask, where does this incompetence come from? And that could be a 2-hour conversation, but I think we've been breeding this incompetence for decades and decades. We have a culture of incompetence. We've created this culture. We have nurtured this culture of incompetence, and we're now reaping the rewards. We're reaping the rewards of that. We have an utter failure to hold anybody accountable for anything they do. And they make excuses. And why do they make excuses? Well, we don't want anybody to feel bad.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other issue. We are sacrificing all the people do not want to, they don't want to fire anybody. And it's all these excuses, and all these excuses come from, you know, harsh time. Well, you know, they have a family that, you know, yeah, tons of people have families. And if you mess up bad enough, especially when lives are at, you know, we had the fireman, that hero who dived over his family, and he's dead now because of people's incompetence. So, yeah, you know what? Guess what? People do need to get fired. And if you can't do a certain job, then you're not the person for that job. Get out and let somebody competent in. But we don't do that anymore in almost any aspect of our society. And it is now costing people's lives. And it's going to cost more. Because the more of this DEI stuff, and that's what she was, this Kimberly Cheadle was a DEI hire. She was a and by Jill Biden, she was I don't know if she was a friend of Jill Biden's, or Jill recommended her, or whatever. But there was this very strong connection.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, really?
Jill Biden was instrumental in making her head of the Secret Service.
I mean, you can tell that from the Secret Service agent that was standing in front of Trump with. You know, with her, she couldn't get her gun back in her holster.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was like a Melissa McCarthy comedy. You know, or like let's make Melissa McCarthy a secret service agent. You know, and the zany antics. You know, it was just crazy. I mean, you know, you could understand an average person doing that, but these people are supposedly trained to be, you know, the best of the best. I mean, it's like Navy SEALs, you know, you wouldn't expect them to, you know, misfire their gun or something like that or whatever.
It's this entire mentality of, look, are there absolutely fantastic female Secret Service agents? I have absolutely no doubt there are. But when your focus isn't to get the best, and some of them happen to be women, okay? And it's about getting more women.
Right.
More of minorities, more of this group, more of that group, solely forgetting more of those. Not because you want the best of the best. And when, and you know what, I just,
I mean, even that woman that was the agent, she was much shorter than Trump. You know, I mean, Trump's a pretty tall guy. He's like 6'3 or 6'2. But I mean, this woman was very short, you know, provided no cover for him. Didn't know. It was just clearly, it wasn't like she was, a 6'7 Swedish, you know, agent here, you know, from a Bond movie or something like that. You know, she was clearly not the best candidate that they could have hired.
Yeah.
And to put right in the harm's way of the president too, like the person that was going to jump on the president to protect him, you know?
Yeah.
I understand if she was working in the back office, you know?
Yeah. But, yeah. And the more we get away from a meritocracy, the more of this kind of thing is going to happen and more people are going to die. And this entire stress of DEI and the importance of DEI is absolutely dangerous, and we now have now seen it firsthand of what the final result of all this DEI mentality is: people dying. Okay, it is an utter incompetence and inability to do a job and to protect people and to protect people's lives. And it was even in Adrian Wooldridge, who is an author. I think he was a professor. He's written many books. He wrote a book with, I think, Thomas Friedman. He's written a lot of books. But anyway, Adrian Wooldridge documented that historically, the alternative to meritocracy has always been nepotism and dynasty. Every single time. It has never been equality or equity. So whenever you get out of meritocracy, it never results in equality. It never results in equity. It is only historically, forever. It has only resulted in nepotism and dynasty.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that is why this stuff is so dangerous. And like, oh, listen, have we been a perfect meritocracy? Of course not. But we've done it better than anybody else has in the history of the world. And that is why we have been such a success.
Right.
We've been such a success because we got rid of nepotism on the most part. Yes, of course, it always helps to know people here or there. But, you know, as you look at all the problems of third worldism, the biggest problem with third worldism isn't because of a lack of money. It's corruption. And so much of that corruption is that it's completely entrenched with nepotism. It's, I'm going to hire my brother. I'm going to hire my cousin. I'm going to hire my brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is. I'm going to appoint this family member to this post in government. And that is why these third world countries and these utterly corrupt countries are so devastatingly poor. It's right. Not because of a lack of resources. Right. It's not because of lack of money. It all has to do with corruption. And that so much of that corruption is based in nepotism.
Right. Not only nepotism in the sense of familial relationships, but also people who donated to the campaign or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, in the 19th century, that was the way you got appointed to government posts, to bureaucracy, was when a new administration came in, they appointed their friends from, you know, back home or people that donated to them, people that got them elected in different counties across the country. They would come to D.C. and work there. And eventually that led to the assassination of James Garfield in 1881. And there was an entire move against that where they said, we can't do this anymore. We need to move toward meritocracy in appointing government officials. And we seem to be going back, undoing all of that. I mean, that was a big thing under Teddy Roosevelt. He said, we're not going to hire people just because they donated to our campaign or got us elected. We're going to have tests. We're going to have standards for these people because these jobs are important and they do important things. And we need to have a merit-based system.
Yeah. And yeah, you're right. We have forgotten. And ladies and gentlemen, this is why James is going to be such an asset to the show, because he is a historian. He has a degree in history, and he is my go-to person whenever I need to know anything about American history. He is a vat of knowledge, and and that's why he's going to be such a great asset to the show.
I can't wait to talk more about the Chester A. Arthur administration, Frank. It's going to be it's going to be riveting. I hope I can do a whole episode on it.
We'll do we'll give you 2 hours, but that's the limit, James.
Frank, I mean, then we're going to go into the Teapot Dome scandal. Talk about meritocracy.
I tell you what, our ratings are going to skyrocket on that. I can't wait, and I'm sure you people out there listening, you can't wait for that either. It is. It's going to be good stuff, rip-roaring stuff, I tell you.
And for all you Chester A. Arthur fans out there, make sure that you like and subscribe.
All right. Want to wrap this up, but one other thing I want to talk about that I've noticed, and that is Trump. He has been uncharacteristically and uncannily quiet, particularly since the debate, and even more so since the assassination attempt. Now, I don't know if this is a new tactic. I don't know if maybe he's gotten a different perspective by almost having been taken out, by almost dying. Both near-death experience sometimes, often, I should say, will focus the mind. So I don't know. Maybe I believe Trump read Sun Tzu's Art of War, and where you do not attack your opponent if they're making mistakes and destroying themselves.
Yeah, I agree with you, Frank, but he also just got shot in the head.
Yeah, but at the same time, he was even uncannily quiet before the assassination attempt, but after the debate. I don't know. I just find it very strange that this guy who just can't keep his mouth shut is now just I think it's smart of him to be keeping quiet, but it's just so uncharacteristic of him.
Sure. But like you said, I mean, the Democratic Party is in, you know, turmoil right now. You know, they have no, you know, they have a presumptive candidate, but they don't really have anything solidified. So let them fight it out between themselves.
Yeah. And I do wonder if that assassination attempt, I mean, you almost die. You know that a few centimeters in one direction of your head, and that would have been the end of you. That's also got to give you pause, give you a different perspective on things.
Sure. I mean, it's something that few of us can relate to.
Actually, that's not true. When you've lived a life of mystery and adventure like I have, James, this kind of thing happens every day.
What are you, a secret agent, Frank?
More like international man of mystery. So that wraps it up for this episode, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening, and please hit like and subscribe and send it to everybody you know. And we will see you next time. Bye-bye.